You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're continuing our crossover podcast preview series for the week. And today we have Doug Branson of Locked On Hornets on the line. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Glad to be here. Glad to be part of what we're calling OPB. Are you down with OPB? Other people's basketball.
Other people's basketball. I like that. Might have to steal that one. So the Hornets and the Heat. Really quickly, want to get into last season's playoff series. Purple shirt guy, Dwayne Wade game winners. I mean, just absolute magic. All I know. Let me just take you back really quick. When Dwayne Wade hit that three-pointer in Game 6 to basically win the game, I grew up with Dwayne Wade, and I grew up cheering for Dwayne Wade. But since I've been doing this and all my other journalistic endeavors, you know, as somebody that's covering the league and the team individually, you know, your fandom starts to wane away a little bit. You become a little bit more objective, a little bit more analytical, and
sure,
a little bit less fanatic and crazy. At that point, when Dwayne Wade hit that three and then started yelling back at purple shirt guy, I got off my couch, ran around my house, and started screaming, "Holy bleep, Dwayne Wade," about 15 times in a row. That was the kind of thing that Dwayne Wade did. And that was the kind of impact he had in Miami for 13 years, and now he's with the Bulls, but we don't need to talk about that. So just take me back a little bit to that series. What was your reaction when Dwayne Wade hit those threes, and in general, game 6 and 7, which were both of them were just such good games.
Well, first of all, that sounds very awesome for you. I'm very happy for you that you that you had that experience. No, I think that when a player of Dwayne Wade's caliber does what he did, I think at least my feeling was I can sleep on this. I can live with this. Now, did I exit the arena that night and go right to the Red Eye Diner, which is right down the street, and eat a giant piece of chocolate cake? Yes, I did, because it was disappointing. But you know, when a guy like that does it, so again, my head rested a little softer that night, knowing that it was Dwayne Wade that eventually put us away, because I knew after game 6 that series was over, because I think not only just because they snatched the momentum away and not because there's a history. I remember back in a series against the Milwaukee Bucks in the original Hornets run, when the same exact thing happened. They went down 0-2, they snagged 3 games and then lost game 6 and eventually lost game 7 to the Bucks. Ray Allen and Big Dog Cliff Robinson. But anyway, so I knew it was over. And the Hornets were injured. They looked tired, but I could live with Dwayne Wade eventually putting away the Hornets. And it was a nice sort of gift that he kind of shut up purple shirt guy, because I think a lot of Hornets fans were a little tired of that guy too.
Really, that's good to know.
Oh yeah. Me personally, I've ranted on Locked On Hornets several times about my feelings on fans who try to insert themselves into the game in that way. I just feel like I'm there to watch a ball game. I'm there to watch professional basketball players play, not idiot fans. I think it's just a half step away from the idiot on the field.
Definitely. So I'm glad to know that you and a lot of other Hornets fans are at least separating yourself from purple shirt guy. So I won't generalize and say all Hornets fans wear purple shirts. I can't do that.
That's a good idea. Okay. I'm wearing a gray shirt right now.
Now I'm glad I knew that was my next question. So so going back to that series then a little, just for one more question before we move on to what's going on this offseason and next season. Jeremy Lin, Kemba Walker, they made a living getting to the line, getting to the free throw line. I think a lot of Heat fans at that point were very angry with Jeremy Lin and Kemba Walker and the calls that they were getting. Did you think that the officiating was a little off in maybe the first 4 or 5 games of that series? This can be a very short answer.
No, I don't. Because I think Len got his fair share of no calls throughout the season and late in the season, especially. I think he took several shots that he had no business taking. I don't think that really had any effect on the officiating in the playoffs. I just think it's a little bit of the odds. I mean, they had to, because of what Eric Spoelstra schemed to take away the three-point shooting of the Hornets. I mean, they had to drive to the basket. They drove aggressively. They drove often. And I just think that they sort of forced the officials' hands in those particular instances. And both Kemba Walker and Jeremy Lin are absolute artists at drawing contact. I mean, they know what to do, both to actually draw contact, and I will admit, they know what to do to get the officials' attention.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I 100% agree with you. I thought a lot of Heat fans were complaining about it, and I completely agree with you. They did force the officials' hands. Speaking of Lin, he's no longer with the team. He's going to go play with the Brooklyn Nets for whatever reason. And they also lost Courtney Lee, and they lost Al Jefferson. I want to talk about Al Jefferson in a minute, but let's start with Jeremy Lin and Courtney Lee. They basically replaced them with Raymond Sessions and Marco Bellinelli. Just talk me through what they lose, what they gain, what you just think about that swap, so to speak.
Well, I think, you know, I've been diving into the statistics on the show and off the show between Ramon Sessions and Jeremy Lin, and I'm certainly not comparing the two one-to-one, but I think Ramon Sessions had a quiet, really good season last season for the Washington Wizards, and when he filled in for John Wall late in the year, he played fantastic basketball, and nobody knew it because the Washington Wizards were already eliminated. But, you know, I think he brings similar elements and had similar usage to Jeremy Lin last season. He brings those to the Hornets. Now, there are a couple of key things that Jeremy Lin brought that I don't think Ramon Sessions can replicate, and that's clutch play. I think Jeremy Lin was he stepped in for Kemba Walker and got two big victories for the Hornets last season, one against the Cavaliers and one against the San Antonio Spurs. The Hornets never beat the Spurs, so that was big. So just that ability to step into the starting role and maybe drop 30 on a given night, you know, that's not going to be what Ramon Sessions does. And Jeremy Lin was able to play key roles in the fourth quarter. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be Ramon Sessions' role. But I think, you know, just in terms of getting to the free throw line, getting to the basket, pushing the tempo, those are all things that Ramon Sessions and Jeremy Lin do very well, and I expect Ramon to step right in. He was a Bobcat. He's familiar with Steve Clifford, and I think he will play better defensively under Steve Clifford. Most players do. So I don't expect a big a drop-off as maybe some other people do, but you certainly lose something a little special with Jeremy Lin. Now, to Courtney Lee, he was fantastic in that playoff series. You know, had some clutch rebounds and knocked down threes that had the Hornets on the verge of winning that playoff series. But, you know, I just don't – I think with the addition of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and you bring in Marco Bellinelli, I just don't know that Courtney Lee played that significant a role on this Hornets team other than just having that playoff experience and stepping in when they needed – an all-around player to replace what they didn't have in Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. I'm not underplaying his role with that Hornets team. I just don't think that by any means he was irreplaceable. And, I mean, the Hornets won a lot of games before Courtney Lee ever came to town. Now, I don't think they could have won those playoff games without Courtney Lee, but I think they'll be okay in the regular season as they implement some of these new pieces in.
And then with Al Jefferson, I mean, Al Jefferson was a Heat killer. I mean, he was one of those guys that just dominated Miami on the boards, always was able to score in the post, particularly in those first few games, even in the playoffs. But outside of the playoffs, during the regular season for the last several years, Al Jefferson basically had his way with Miami. What do you think happens now? I mean, is Cody Zeller the starter now? Do you think Frank Kaminsky gets more playing time? What did the Hornets do post-Al Jefferson? How does he impact the offense?
Well, Cody Zeller, I think, is the projected starting five for the Hornets now. It was a transition. He came into the league as a maybe stretch four, but I think we found out over a couple of years that he could not stretch, and they've transitioned him more into the center role. Last season, he was more comfortable. He eventually took that starting spot from Al Jefferson. Jefferson had to play off the bench when he returned from his suspension. But then you saw Cody Zeller had a hip injury in that playoff series, and then they really needed Jefferson because, again, we go back to what Spoelstra did in terms of closing off shooters for the and pressuring Kemba Walker. I mean, they had to have Jefferson in there to get some stable scoring. And you mentioned it. He was a Heat killer, but he was also a Hassan Whiteside killer because Hassan Whiteside, for whatever reason, could not stay without Jefferson when Al Jefferson's offense was at its peak. So when the Heat and the Hornets face off, I think one of the big question marks is going to be, can Zeller, has he put on any weight? Has he put on any strength? Can he do battle with Hassan Whiteside underneath, frustrate him, possibly use his quickness to get inside and make Hassan Whiteside make mistakes, get him into foul trouble like Al Jefferson was so good at doing? And if he can't, then, well, I just hope that the Hornets and Heat don't meet in the playoffs again.
I like Cody Zeller, by the way. I think he's gonna have a good year, I think, this season. Roy Hibbert. You guys got Roy Hibbert. This is the first defensive-minded center that Steve Clifford has had. Do you think that he plays a bigger role? Do you think Hibbert kind of gets back to that Pacers-level verticality-era defense and can be a standout again?
Well, the Hornets sure hope so, because they did not have a dedicated shot blocker last season or really a dedicated interior post defender when they let go of Bismack Biyombo. So they're hoping he can fill that role. Now, the Hornets do a great job of protecting the rim without having that player, and they do it with a scheme that's about sagging back just a little bit and then closing quickly onto shooters. It requires all five guys to be really locked in, and it requires one player to be communicating with the defense at all times. Last season, it was Marvin Williams. They hope that MKG can stay healthy and resume his role as defensive quarterback. I hope that Roy Hibbert can reclaim that former glory, both from an interior defensive perspective, but also I think he can help this team do a better job of rebounding in that second unit. I thought it was a weakness last season, just having that size in the second unit without Al Jefferson. And Roy Hibbert's not a tremendous rebounder in his own right, but he takes up space. He can block out two, maybe three guys sometimes, and allow guys like MKG or Marvin Williams to swoop in and nab boards. Athletic wings can come in and grab boards. And it could help them on the offensive rebounding side as well. So I think there are a couple of different things, and it's going to depend on who he ends up playing with. He can't stretch the floor at all anymore, so he's got to be under the basket. So you have to pair him with as much shooting as possible. And so a lot of, I think, Roy Hibbert's success is going to depend on another revamp project in Marco Bellinelli. Can he return to his three-point shooting form that he seemed to lose in Sacramento? This is what the Hornets do, Wes. They've done it for 2 years straight now. They take these revamp projects on. Last season, it was Jeremy Lin, it was Jeremy Lamb, it was Nick Batum. All three guys coming off of down years, they all played exceptional, and the Hornets benefited from it. Now, here we are. They're getting Roy Hibbert from Los Angeles. They've got Marco Bellinelli from Sacramento off of some of the worst years of their careers. We'll see if they can replicate the magic.
I think the easiest way to revamp a player is to sign somebody that just played for the Kings, too. That might be the easiest route to a revamp.
Los Angeles, too. I mean, they're picking the right places, right? They're picking places where it's easy to say, well, look at the situation. There's a pipeline building. We took Jeremy Lin from the Los Angeles Lakers, too. So there's a little, we'll take your tired, your poor, your Los Angeles Lakers yearning to be free.
So Frank Kaminsky over Justice Winslow. We got to talk about that a little bit. I know that's a sore spot.
Okay.
I know it's a sore spot for a lot of Hornets fans. But let's use hindsight. Looking back now a year later, what are your thoughts on Frank Kaminsky? Or do you think that this is going to be a situation where Hornets fans are always comparing Kaminsky to Justice Winslow? And then what's next for Frank Kaminsky? As you said, they have Zeller. They have Roy Hibbert. Marvin Williams is there. Spencer Hawes is a reserve that they have. They could play small maybe with MKG at the four. I mean, what's Frank Kaminsky's role in this offense?
Well, his role on the his role in the offense is to stretch the floor, mm-hmm. to be a threat from outside.
Can he play center?
He can play in a smaller lineup, yeah. But I think he's going to be the dedicated backup power forward to Marvin Williams. He played 21.8 minutes per game last season. He started 3 games. I don't see that really changing. I mean, he'll get spot starts here and there, and I think he ends up playing 21, 22 minutes per game. I mean, that's what you have to understand. I think that's what Hornets fans may not grasp fully, is that he was a rookie – and he played almost 22 minutes a game for a Steve Clifford coach team. Clifford doesn't have like the Tom Thibodeau stigma against rookies by any means, but this is a coach that demands effort. He demands defense. He demands a lot of things for you to stay on the court. And the fact that Frank Kaminsky was able to come in, he didn't have to. I mean, they had plenty of depth in that front court. They had veterans like Spencer Hawes and Tyler Hansbrough, and Frank Kaminsky was able to stay on the court and play. I wouldn't want to say significant, because his usage percentage was pretty low for a power forward, but he played a role on a professional basketball team that went to the playoffs and had a chance to go to the second round, and he played a role in that Miami series. Now, unfortunately, it was not a great role, because he got taken advantage of by the Heat's smaller lineups, including Lawal Ding, and that's been sort of the buzz around Frank Kaminsky. Even he admits he has to get better on defense. He has to get better and smarter on defense in terms of judging when guys are going to pull up and shoot and when they're going to drive. He bit on a lot of those Lawal Ding pump fakes, as I'm sure you saw, and so he'll have to get better. But I think he can, and I think he's shown flashes. First of all, he looks comfortable, but I think he's also shown some flashes of very special post play. And if he's given the opportunity, which I think Steve Clifford and assistant coach Patrick Ewing, they want to get him more looks in the post. I think he could, you know, when you pair him alongside Marvin Williams, I think they make for complementary backup starting positions there at the power forward spot.
Couple more players that I want to hit. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. I mean, you've already talked to him about him as an addition, and technically he is, because he was injured basically all last season. What's next for MKG? First of all, do you think he could stay healthy? Are these recurring injuries something that are going to keep recurring? Are you worried about them? What's next for him?
Well, do I think he can stay healthy? I mean, past indicators say no. I think all Hornets fans and people that cover the team certainly are cheering for the kid, because he has an amazing heart. But as Michael Kidd-Gilchrist will always say, you know, he of course wants to stay healthy, but he's not going to change the way he plays the game. He's going to give it his absolute all. He's going to throw his body around the court. He's going to chase after every loose ball. And that's part of what makes him a special basketball player. I mean, they're just now starting to get a grasp on hustle stats. You know, he's not a guy that's going to go out and give you, you know, a steal and a half and a block and a half a game. You know, he doesn't put up the numbers that get him the consideration for Defensive Player of the Year that other guys get. But he can cover multiple positions. He can help and stay on his man. And he has an incredible gift of getting the ball in transition, pushing the ball in transition. And I think, you know, he adds a lot to this Hornets team. And he's, you know, his shooting is getting better, and he's developing a 3-point corner game. And if that happens, then it adds a whole new wrinkle to this offense, and it allows Steve Clifford to play 4 out, 1 in, which is what he always wants to do. So, you know, I think that's the next step for him is developing that corner 3-point shot. He certainly has the confidence. And over the 7 games that he was able to play last season, he looked confident. He was shooting the ball, and they were going down for the most part. So, you know, we'll just have to see. Again, I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, he can stay healthy, because we've seen no past indication of that. But the Hornets certainly need that to happen to sustain some of the losses they are sustaining on the bench.
And Kemba Walker. I'm a big fan of Kemba Walker. Ever since he came out of UConn, I always liked his heart. I liked the way that he played the game. And every season, he seems to get better at something. And last season, he became a very, very good his scoring numbers and percentages were very high. Became a very, very good facilitator. What is Kemba Walker improving on? What's he doing right now this offseason?
I think it's just continuing the work that he began on his shot. It wasn't just, oh, I'm going to practice more three-point shots. There were some changes to fix some hitches in the way that he shot the basketball. And, you know, he worked very hard with shooting coach Bruce Kretzer to fix some of those things. So I think it's more, you know, Kemba Walker and MKG both are absolute gym rats. I mean, they always stay in the gym. They have that reputation on the team. You know, I really think that to take, you know, another leap for him, I think he's got to look at distribution and getting getting some more assists. And I think it can happen this season for two reasons. One, he's got a year under his belt with Nick Batum. And having that second distributor opened up a lot of things for him in terms of scoring. But now I think, you know, he can work the ball to Nick Batum even more. And if Batum, who struggled to consistently hit the three last season, if he improves in that respect, then I think you're going to see some more assists for Kemba Walker. But the second reason is I think if MKG can stay healthy, MKG is a secret weapon in the pick and roll. He's a great roll man, and I've seen it plenty of times. MKG and Kemba Walker running the pick and roll, and I think that you could see his assist numbers rise this season if everyone stays healthy, because he was hovering around, I think, a little over five last season. He's gotten that number to six and a half two seasons ago. So if he can get it back there, I mean, I don't see any reason why Kemba Walker can't make an All-Star game.
So we're talking about Walker and his improvement. Nicholas Batum, always consistent. MKG, can he stay healthy? Marvin Williams, I'm a big fan of. I mean, you could talk to my co-host, David Ramil, over at Lockdown Heat. I talk about Marvin Williams every chance that I get. I love his stretch four ability. I love how, like, the NBA kind of caught up to Marvin Williams, if that makes sense, which is an insane thing to think. But he was not too big to play the three, not maybe, you know, not big enough to play the four. And now with this new small ball thing, he's really found a niche for himself. I'm hoping that for the Heat, Derek Williams can kind of find that and be like their Marvin Williams, so to speak. I like Cody Zeller. I like this team in general. I'm a Frank Kaminsky guy. If everybody stays healthy, how good can the Hornets be?
I think if the starting five stays healthy, because that's the key. They didn't have their starting five last season, and they really didn't even have the second iterate after the MKG injury in the preseason. They didn't really have their second iteration of their starting five for a large majority of the season. So if they can keep that unit together, I see them eclipsing 50 wins. I honestly do, because this is a unit that has been together for a while now. There's some continuity here, and you add to that, they found that sort of special something with Nick Batum. And I think now that he's been there for 1 year and he's committed, this is a team that, and it sounds weird to say, well, first of all, it's a modern NBA team. And a lot of credit goes to Coach Clifford and Rich Cho, the general manager, for building a team that's fit for the modern NBA. But I'll also say this. They went out and found guys who, A, buy into Coach Steve Clifford's system and buy into what he demands in terms of work ethic. They also found guys that get along in the locker room, that it's not even about building chemistry. They just have chemistry, because you look at these guys, Kemba Walker, MKG, Nick Batum, Cody Zeller, and Marvin Williams, quiet, subtle. They don't say a lot. They let their play on the court speak for them. And they just have a lot of similar personalities. And I think it's been key, a big key to their success on the court. You just don't have any drama. It makes it tough to podcast. We don't have as many stories ever since Lance Stephenson left town, but it makes for better basketball, I think.
All right, last question. You mentioned to me, before recording this, we recorded your podcast, a little bit of a Heat talk on your Hornets podcast, and you did mention that you're from Gastonia, where Hassan Whiteside calls home. Tell me about
Pride of Gastonia.
Tell me. So I know that one day, right next to the Doug Branson statue, there will be a Hassan Whiteside statue in Gastonia. Tell me about your hometown. I want to know everything about it.
Oh, man, my hometown. Great barbecue. Okay. It's a pretty good grid. You can get around the town. If you know the main streets, you can get around town. It's a little big town. It's not too tiny of a town. They filmed part of Talladega Nights, Ballad of Ricky Bobby. They filmed part of it in Gastonia, the scene where his dad runs the car through the house. That was filmed in a neighborhood behind my neighborhood. So we've got a couple little things like that. Yeah. Hassan Whiteside, he sort of became well known shooting hoops over in the Dowd YMCA, which is literally across the street from where we record our podcast, from the Gittimer.com studios in Uptown Charlotte. So I think, you know, Charlotte, Gastonia, we're always going to be tied to Hassan Whiteside for better or worse. But I want the kid to succeed so bad because, well, first of all, there's the local connection, but also, you know, it's what we talked about, I think, on that episode. You know, he yearns for respect and, you know, he wants it so bad and it comes out in negative ways sometimes. But I really hope he gets it because he's got that talent and he certainly deserves it, even though he acts out in ways that makes you think he doesn't. When you see him play at his highest level, and I've seen it up close and personal, it's damn near impossible to say he doesn't deserve it.
All right, well, that's everything we got. I'm buying stock in this Hornets team, by the way. I really like this. I like that squad that's going on up there. I agree with you. I think this could be a special year for them. But thanks for joining us. This podcast was special. We really appreciate it, Doug. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
That's all we got for today. And whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, inquire about advertising, or just say hi. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us. Catch you next time.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.